Okay, well, welcome to the month three ETR investable briefing that covers the trading period from the 1st of March to the 31st of March. And as the briefing document explains, exchange traded receivables are leases, monetary obligations are bills issued under contract for assets, goods, and services supplied to investment quality companies. Are credit insured invoices from investment grade insurers. What this means is that an ETR is evidence of a debt owing from one company to another, and typically these tend to be the larger companies or banks that are household names, and they owe money to their smaller micro to medium sized suppliers. And we call these micro to medium sized supplier businesses originators, simply because they originate the debt obligation that creates the transaction that ultimately becomes the ETR that are traded on the exchange. So the ETR is evidence of the large company's liability to pay the smaller one, and credit exchange buy these ETR at a nominal discount to their face value. And doing that, when the ETR are settled or paid in full, the difference between the face value that is settled and the discounted price that it was purchased at creates a margin, and it's that margin that creates the yield or return for investors. Credit exchange also provides other credit facilities to other types of transactions, such as trade finance, asset finance, and others. Essentially, they all work on the same principles that the traded ETR is a business transaction, and the exchange provides liquidity. It's paid a commission for doing that, and that commission is very similar to a bank's interest rate. Speaking about banks, last May, back in 2021, I spoke about the Central Bank of Ireland's second financial stability review and how it noted multiple central banks across the world were working to maintain loose financing conditions by keeping interest rates low and launching bond buying initiatives like the European Central Bank's $1.85 trillion pandemic emergency purchase program. This was supposed to help to keep down borrowing costs for governments and businesses alike. So out of curiosity, I went back to check the ECB website to see how this program was going, only to find out that there hasn't been a single update on this important initiative in the last 12 months. Really, like nothing. So I'm thinking that maybe they can use some of that money to tackle the real problem we're facing at the moment, being inflation. And I'm not making a tongue-in-cheek comment. If there were all those funds set aside for combating the effects of COVID, and they don't appear to have been used, then why not divert them to what is really hurting everyone, which is inflation? But then again, it's the ECB. How fantastic it is that this essentially unaccountable self-governed entity can make a statement like it did 12 months ago and then do nothing. Or surely if they have done something, they should at the very least be telling us about it. You'll probably learn that I'm not a huge ECB fan, but I'm also not a fan of bank bashing either. So it's all a little bit surprising that they have made this announcement and there seems to be no real outcome from it. Anyhow, if you have to take a look at the real culprit that's crept out of the woodwork and look like it's going to be here for a while, it is the inflation. If you think about what's happening to inflation since the start of the year, we're looking at an overall increase of, say, 7 to 7.5%. And if you couple that with the strengthening dollar-euro position, which has seen a 6% gain in the same period, and then you add the two of those together to get 13.5%, let's say for simplicity, we round that up to 15% for good measure. Suddenly, the euro in your pocket has just lost 15% of its buying power. What does this mean in real terms? What it means is that any European company out in the market that's competing against US dollar-led businesses, which broadly speaking is almost all forms of international trade, since the start of this year, they have seen a 15% loss in their competitive position. Put more simply, any company involved in that form of trade has no choice but to increase their prices. And a 15% price increase in pretty much any industry is a potential business killer. But they, as I say, they have no choice. The prices have to go up. And rising prices occurring as quickly as they've done this year will probably continue to rise until something breaks. I'm not talking about hyperinflation within Europe necessarily, but look at Turkey. Currently, they're experiencing an inflation rate of 36%. My colleague Neil, to the left of me here, tells me that it's probably closer to 60%. The last time that happened was 20 years ago. As for the EU, the last time it had an inflation problem was back in 2008, when it was 4%, and today we're seeing double that. So what is the ECB actually doing about it? It has to be asked. Researching online, I couldn't find a graph that went back far enough to show rates like 8%. So I'm guessing that if something isn't done and done pretty quickly, we're looking like we're heading back to the 70s or the 80s. The point being, inflation is becoming a serious issue, not only in Ireland and the UK or indeed the EU, but everywhere. And rising inflation means two things to you and your clients. Firstly, if you add negative bank deposit interest rates of 1% to the 7 or 7.5% inflation rate, your clients are looking at losing 1/12 of their cash deposit value if this continues for the rest of 2022. You could argue that they'll make gains elsewhere. For example, if they're in business, they'll increase their prices by the 15% I mentioned earlier, and everything will be grand. Yeah, maybe so, but that's a reaction to a market. It's not a cure. And moreover, not all your clients are in business. There's a lot of pension money and private investors' funds in there too. So that's the negative message to get you to think about what we do at Credit and why you aren't putting more of your clients' cash or more of their clients' cash money into ETR. So forgive the sales pitch, but we are sitting on a strong market with lots of good demand out there. So we need you to increase your business with us. Now to the second and more positive point, and that is that inflation boosts borrowing, particularly in business. Because when inflation forces up the price of things, businesses need to borrow more to buy more raw materials, buy more services into their company, pay increased utility bills. And all of this causes interest rates to increase. And that means that we in Credit will have to follow suit. So ultimately, what this means to you and your investors is that if we increase our sell rate to originators, we can afford to increase our buy rate to your investors. We already started this program last year. Last month, we said we'd cut the artificial rate from 3% back to its market rate of around 2.1%, 2.2%. But the current market, to be honest, makes me a little uneasy. We're debating internally this week on how we should proceed. Do we pull away our artificial prop and let the market rip and see where it brings us to, or do we hold firm? Instinctively, I'd say we should pull back, let the price fall, and watch what happens. If we don't like what we see between now and the end of May, we can call it early and put the prop back in place. Anyway, that's just my opinion. Let's see what the trade desk and the board have to say during the course of this week. However you're looking at it, we are in the right place with the right products at the right time. When I talk about place, obviously, I mean international trade and, of course, shipping. The dollar-euro situation, combined with supply and demand issues, coupled with inflationary pressures, means we should be able to drive our business forward and provide healthy returns to your investors while we're at it too. For those of you that attended the briefing where we analysed the group's accounts for 2021, although they aren't yet filed, you may recall we had a cash balance of about 27 million plus. And as at week 16, meaning last week, we deployed a further 40% of that cash into the market. And you'll see from the centre of the briefing, this is to debtors like General Electric and Nestle, amongst others. These are probably some of the strongest credits available in the global market today. So not only are we in a strong and growing market, but we're also ensuring we buy the best available ETR creditworthy paper we can find too. So a rising market means riskier assets come into play, and writing business in the market requires a strong track record and unwavering principles that won't entertain unnecessary risk. And that's pretty much a definition of who we are at Credit. We're a cautious, well-established finance provider that has put in place best-in-class policies and procedures combined with role and personnel segregation to ensure we find the right risk with the right yield. Well, what does that mean in reality, and how does it affect our day-to-day operations? Well, let's take my role, for example. As chief executive, you'd expect that I make all the important decisions and make the decisive moves within the group. And naturally, you would also think that I decide who ultimately we do business with, but you'd be wrong. As I say to most people, I may have the title, but in Credit, the real power lies where it should be, with the credit team. What this means is that I can meet with investors and make presentations like I'm doing on this call. I also meet originators, just like others on the deal desk. And like that team, I meet them and decide if credit is right for them. If their requirements fit our well-documented criteria, I'll progress that business to a point of issuing an RPA or term sheet, and ultimately write what we call a deal sheet. However, once the deal sheet's written, it's the people on the deal desk, including me, we're off the pitch. We have to hand the deal over to the trade desk. They conduct their own due diligence, again, according to our well-documented policies, and they produce what we call a credit paper. The decision on whether to trade a particular piece of business is based on the credit team's evaluation of all the collateral provided, and it is they, and not I, that decide whether an originator is traded or not. In other words, we follow strict practices, and just because your role is manager or supervisor or even chief executive, the group follows policies and not personal opinions. That's what the group is what it is today, and that's how and why we've achieved the growth and stability that is evident in our numbers. Anyhow, let's get back to the actual briefing document, where it states at the end of March, Credit Exchange held active RSA of just over 66 million. And this has remained stable at this level since we changed our accounting policy on assets back in August of 2021. As you know, RSA stands for Revolving Sale Agreement, and a Revolving Sale Agreement is a document or contract between the micro to medium-sized business, or the originator, and Credit Exchange. The Revolving Sale Agreement is a commitment by the originator to sell a certain value of ETR to the exchange in any given period. Normally, it's 1 year. So, for example, let's say an originator needs a trade credit facility revolving of about 1 million in order to run their business. They'll come to the credit group, much like they would to a bank, and apply for that credit facility of 1 million on a revolving basis every 60 days. This means that they are agreeing to sell to us 1 million of ETR every 6 days, or 6 million worth of ETR over a 12-month period. This commitment to sell the 6 million of ETR annually on Credit Exchange is documented in the RSA agreement with the trade desk. Similarly, if we're looking at a leasing transaction where the originator wants to buy an asset for, let's say, 5 million over 5 years, this would result in total payments over 60 months of approximately 6 million, meaning that each month for 60 months, the originator would pay 10,000 each month. Each one of these payments is an ETR, and collectively the total 6 million is part of the active revolving sale agreements we report on at these briefings each month. As stated at the end of March, Credit Exchange held 66 million of these contracts on the 31st of March. Active RSA contracts continue to remain short as trading patterns and speed of settlement and the shortening of the cash-to-cash life cycle, which I'll come to in a moment, with the ever-increasing use of trade and shipping, shipping and or freight finance. Trade finance in its purest form, meaning that we support commodity trades and shipping-related transactions, is a core competency and a principal activity on the trade desk. Moving to the next figure, there was 54.72 million of funding fully allocated. As you know, this means that we had just under 55 million of investors' funds in the market. If you add that to the 57.42 to the 66 million of RSA or revolving sale agreements that represent futures orders that we have not yet filled, this amounts to just over 120 million in trade that we have on our books for March. This figure has been rising each month since January and shows strong and stable growth as we put more money into the market. Moving to investor redemptions, we're glad to see another easing back in withdrawals from 1.17 to almost 1 million flat. But as I've been saying since the start of the year, it's still higher than it's been in any prior year. And it's a clear indication that we need to expedite our plans for issuing securities or looking at institutional debt or of some sort, or maybe a blended solution between the two. Anyhow, that's one of the main points of discussion at each board meeting since September of last year, but I think it's now time to really put a bit of a fire under that program. For over a year now, we've included the Baltic Index in this briefing, and as you may know already, this is the index against which most shipping contracts are linked. The index has had a turbulent first few months in this year, dropping from 2,300 in early January down to a low of 1,300, but it's returned back to the 2,300 mark as recently as this week. Hard to call where it's headed given the war in Ukraine, inflationary and other issues, but the FFA market seems to indicate there's an upward and positive view for 2022. The FFA markets are the derivative financial futures that predict future cargo transport prices ahead of time. And when you combine these with the Baltic Index together, they provide a pretty good indication of how the market's most likely to behave in the near to short term. So it's unlikely we'll see the volatility and record-breaking levels like the 3,000 and even 5,000 in the Baltic during last year. But that's okay. We like the current outlook. It's stable and it's even. So the pressure, if it's going to be coming from anywhere, is going to be coming from inflation. To add more in-depth market knowledge and substance to this briefing, we recently made a provisional agreement with the market research department of a company called Seaborn in Greece. From their weekly shipping market research reports, they summarize important events that will impact markets, and most notably, they talk about the price of crude oil hitting a 14-year high in March as more sanctions are placed on Moscow by the EU and the US, which is putting more strain on markets globally. Unsurprisingly, other key commodities like iron ore and coal continue to rise at alarming rates. Iron ore has seen a 70% increase since last November, and this is happening against a backdrop where the Chinese ports are completely stocked with the highest levels of iron ore that they've seen in several decades. So we have lots, but we're buying more anyway, seems to be the message, as they wait for the recent lockdowns to ease and presumably production seeks to recover from the lost output of the last few months. For different reasons, coal is regaining some of its black gold status despite environmental concerns, as both the EU and US sanctions on Russia target coal as well. 23% of Russian coal is consumed by the UK, and that in turn represents half of the total EU consumption of 45% of the total Russian coal exports. So Russia will need to find new markets, like India, it would seem, from recent events in the news, as there is a ban on all coal exports from Russia to come into effect on the 8th of August this year. Although we hear in other news that Germany appears to be very busy buying up stocks in the last few weeks. All of these developments will feed into our market as we see more and more inquiries for the dry bulk and indeed tanker vessels that are needed to move these products to market. Increasing commodity prices combined with increasing demand means that the market continues to require more of the funding and liquidity that we at the credit group provide. Having entered the market quietly in 2017, early 2018, and moving into officially into the market in 2020, we're seeing those inquiries rise as our name starts to enjoy some familiarity. Having been in the market for the past 18 months, it continues to show strong underlying assets and a good short to mid-term outlook. As this briefing is about March's trade, you'll see a sharp upturn in the month's trade for last month from 10 million January-February to almost 17 million for March, and it's some 50% higher than what was traded in March 2021. Looking at the Treasury performance, as you'd expect, it's lagging behind at 11.26 million as its performance oscillates behind the peaks created from increased trading. Moving to the ETR average duration figure of 80 days, this number is what we call the credit index. It is the ETR average duration, or number of days it takes for an ETR to get settled. Last month was the confirmation that the 80 mark might actually hold. We haven't seen this level of activity or speed of settlement in more than 18 months, and would seem to indicate that we're returning to the exchange's average credit index of 75 days. To explain in a little more detail, the credit index is the cash-to-cash cycle from the day an ETR is issued and purchased in cash, and the number of days it takes for the debt to be extinguished or settled and the cash returned. At 80 days, it's almost home, and no doubt once it gets there, trade desk could be looking to push it to new lows with more exposure to trade, finance, and shipping deals that in the main tend to be shorter than some of the more indigenous transactions that we do. The credit index to us is a form of economic indicator that our market, the one that we're trading, is getting back to normal. Moving to the center of the document, this is where we list the 10 largest investable ETR holdings and the top 10 rated holdings. These two lists show what companies or organizations owed the exchange the largest amounts of money as at the 31st of March. And as usual, you can see that the HSE has returned after a short absence. We can also see the repeated appearance of Atradius and some newcomers like Nestle, General Electric, and Balfour Beatty, with CBRE remaining for its fourth month in a row. Moving to the top 10 rated investable ETR on the right side, there's the regular reappearance of Transport Supplies, Paramount 21, and others. These are the highest rated debtors, and apart from Nestle, as none of these were investment grade or have an investment grade rating on the 31st of March, it's a random selection of organizations, regardless of the amount of their liability, and is simply a selection of the most creditworthy. The pie chart below these two sets of lists continues to move back to its typically well-diversified spread of ETR across the market. Health and Community rose slightly from 16 in February to 19.44%. Wholesale retail continues to drop back and comes in at 26.85%, with food and beverage holding its steady position of 7.4%. Manufacturing was off by 2 percentage points, and construction gained 2 percentage points last month. And other than those, there was no other significant changes recorded. The pie chart continues to reference the EU NACE categorization system until we get our credit classification implemented as part of the new credit machine release scheduled for later this year. Looking at the performance section of the briefing document, it shows that volumes were down some 27%, but that volumes were up 100% when you compare March 2022 to March 2021. Really, what's that saying to us is we're trading less volume, but the value of each transaction is much greater. So we traded 18 million March 31. We traded 18 million to March 31 in 2021. And as you can see, we traded north of 36 million in 2022. I've mentioned the credit index of 80. And to finish on our performance in March, the largest single trade was a trade finance deal of 1.63 million. As explained in the investable brochure and also in other briefings, the average value of an ETR is and remains roughly 2,000 euro. But we have traded ETR where the value has been less than a euro. And as you can see here, last month, the largest one was 1.63. This was a ship mobilization trade for demolition, where our originator required funding at this level to move a vessel from what is called as-is, where is, to Alang in India, meaning the cost of moving the vessel from where it was picked up and then moving it to India cost 1.63 million. And what we like about these trades is that they're almost always completed using letters of credit, meaning we're buying bank risk. Because this is a letter of credit and there's assignment on it, that means we have one bank confirming another bank's creditworthiness as part of our trade. And what's not to like about trades like that? Finally, let's move to the trends section of the March briefing, where you can see that the investor's yield or buy price started at circa 2.1% and ended at 2.134. As you know, Trade Desk have been supporting the synthetic 3% yield for 8 months now. And as I said, I personally think we should pull back from that. And also, as I said earlier, that's just my opinion. I don't yet have the Trade Desk or Treasury opinion on it. And also, this needs to be agreed at Wednesday's board meeting. So if the board agree with me, then next week you'll see the rate return to the 2.1, 2.2 level, meaning that the 80 to 90 basis points bonus, if you want to call it, will fall away. However, regardless of what the decision is, with the negative yield of 1% in bank deposits, the investors are getting a yield that will be between 3.3 and 4% better by buying investable exchange traded receivables than by letting their cash language unattended in the bank. As you all know, this rate changes daily and can be checked anytime on the investable.com website. And it might be worth having a look at that Monday next to see what the board's decision has been. To finish the briefing, you will see a repeat of the active RSA revolving sale agreement of €66.01. And that concludes this month's briefing for March 2022. Thank you very much.